But this started, the Jew hatred started a long time ago. There's a book came out 2 years ago. It's a beautiful book of all the presidents of the United States, their behavior vis-a-vis the Jew. Because most of them came from the South, and they came to Washington with a ready-made up mind. The Jew is no good. Because they heard this from the priest and the father and mother. But all the presidents, except Roosevelt, we're going to talk, became acquainted with a Jew, a lawyer, or in any other thing, and he saw that it's not true what they told about the Jew. They're human beings. And they changed their whole attitude about the Jew, all the presidents. There wasn't one anti-Semite. In each time you were able to get some, a Jew could get a president. Now we go to Roosevelt. Roosevelt, in all his administration, he used the Jew. He had the rabbi of the Free Synagogue in Manhattan, Rabbi Steven Weiss, as his closest friend and advisor. When Mr. Kransky came from Poland and told him about the concentration camps and killing the Jews in the gas chambers, he told Roosevelt not to tell anybody, because Kransky met with Roosevelt. And he made them keep quiet for 3 months. The rabbi kept quiet because Roosevelt asked. For him, it was more important to be friends with Roosevelt than saving 1,000 or 2,000 or 10,000 Jews. Now I let you into a secret what happened to Roosevelt. Revenge. He is the only president of the United States who has today a great-grandchild, a rabbi. His name is Yeshua Ettinger. He lives in Philadelphia. If you go to Philadelphia, open up the telephone book, Yeshua Ettinger. How did he become a rabbi? Roosevelt had a daughter, Anna. Anna Roosevelt was his daughter. Anna had a grandson who married a Jewish lady called Mrs. Adler. And Mrs. Adler gave birth to Yeshua. And they lived in near Boston. And this kid, as he grew up, 8, 9, 10 years old, sees that the mother is lighting 2 candles every Friday night, hiding it. But they went to Christmas parties and everything. She went here and she went there. And he was just curious. He ended up in Israel, went to school, and he got semicha, and he is not an Orthodox, but he is like a conservative rabbi in Philadelphia, Yeshua Ettinger. So you could see, I feel good about it, because if he would get up from his grave, he would go back. What could you imagine from all the presidents it happened to him? They don't like us. And today is the same thing. This last month, they took a survey in America. 35 million people in America hate the Jews. The document. 35 million, which is about 15%. And what's going on? I'll just show you a few publications that you don't know about. I don't want to feel you bad, but I want you to know about it. See this? It's printed in 2007. Magazines. If they catch a Jew anywhere, they'll kill him. This is the skinheads. And under the American law, you cannot stop them until you don't find they did something. Talk, they could talk anything they want. In Germany, there's a law, if you print anything against the Holocaust, you go to jail. In Austria, you go to jail. Mr. Irwin went to jail for 3 years in Austria, but they let him go because he promised that he's sorry what he did. The guy in England. Yes. And you know what he does now? They let him out before 12 months short. Now he's planning a trip to come to America and start the whole thing again. There was no Holocaust, and everything is a mind. We have to know one thing. You're in Gaules. It's a good Gaules. It's the best Gaules in the world. But you're still in Gaules. Don't take nothing for granted. Chas v'sholom, you saw when McCarthy was, how many Jews went to jail because the teacher spoke to a professor or somebody was in Hollywood helping making a film. You know, things could happen. I don't say it's going to happen. But luckily we have Israel, and they are afraid of them. Because you could see that when America wanted to get the hostages out of Tehran, from Iran, 444 days, they went with the Mechitten, with Egypt, with the Air Force, American Air Force, and the Egyptian Air Force went to rescue the... What did they do? Nothing. It collapsed. The whole thing collapsed. Israel sent his Air Force into Entebbe, right? And beside Netanyahu, everybody came back, except Mrs. Bloch, who was in the hospital, the little lady. But otherwise, there's no country in the world who will stick up for a Jew. Only a Jew could stick up for a Jew. We are in Gaules, and we have to realize that everything is temporary. Every year goes by without trouble. We should be grateful to the great Hashem, because he is watching over us. Otherwise, we have no chance to survive. Any other questions?
Yeah, maybe we have a little time left. Maybe you could talk about how you...
About what?
The Eichmann trial.
Eichmann trial, okay. You know, we have a problem. You may not like what I tell you, but I'm going to tell you the truth, what's going on. The Orthodox Jews, the religious Jews, are very detached from the Holocaust. I'm not talking you, because you came, you want to listen. 90% of the people have nothing to do with it. Yeshivas exclude the Holocaust. Except there is two yeshivas in Far Rockaway, Yeshiva of Far Rockaway and Dar Chetore. I teach Holocaust there for the last 13 years, twice a week. Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Sure, I go to Yeshiva Chassam Sofer once a year, but it's only because some parents are pushing it. The administration are not interested. I go to Yeshiva of Kamenitz once a year. I go to Lakewood once a year, but it's not done with a... I show you how it's done. 2 months ago, I had a lecture in Lakewood for ladies only, and the Rosh Yeshiva calls me up. I hear you're coming to Lakewood. How about stopping by me, too? I said, look, I'm coming to Lakewood. I have a lot of grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I'm taking out to a restaurant. I want to spend with my family once I'm in Lakewood. If you want, I'll sleep over, and I'll see you in the morning. No, in the morning we have this year and that year and that year and that year. I says, look, you know what? Could I call you until 11? Yeah, you could call me until 11. He didn't call. It's not that I care, but you have to understand, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars are wasted by the non-from Jews on things which brings nothing to us. They build museums, they make pictures and movies, and they do everything else. They wouldn't let a yeshiva have a penny. Because you don't care about us. We're talking about Holocaust survivors. To show you an example, 10 years ago I was invited to Washington, D.C. for a conference of the Holocaust professors and teachers, gathering of 500 people. I had my yarmulke, and, oh, you're one of those? Those means the frumakas. So finally I found a friend from my city. When he saw me, he pulled out a yarmulke from his pocket. He was embarrassed. 509 people were there. 11 kosher meals were served. Shabbos, they lined up, going to with buses, and, you know, comes Friday night to Daven. So I go there, it's men and women together, so I'm walking out. So my friend says, "Wie läuft?" I said, "That's not for me." says, you know what, I know the manager, we're going to separate it. All right, no machitza, acceptable for me. Woman on one side. The guy who finishes Lachit Loidi and singing beautiful Hasidic song, and I was so happy, a heimische Mensch. He takes off his talis, he throws it away, the yarmulke, and says to me, you know, you people are funny. You want money from us, but you don't do nothing for the Holocaust. They feel that the Jewish religious bloc hates them. So therefore, there's no money for the Holocaust, for the yeshivas. I have a friend who comes to me 4 weeks ago and tells me he has an idea to cure that. How are you going to do it? He says, he knows Torah Mesorah, he knows the OU, he has a brother-in-law there. They're going to institute that if a Holocaust survivor comes into a shul, everybody will get up. So therefore, these irreligious people will see that we respect the Holocaust people. I said, it's too late. It's not going to work. The problem is, they are very rich, and God help them. They have children, doctors, scientists. The children don't need their wealth. So it goes to either to a hospital or goes even to a university. One guy I know left $121,000 for a university. He wouldn't give for a yeshiva a penny. And as another one proves it to me, he has a grandson in a yeshiva. I don't want to mention your name. He was invited, he's from Berlin, he was invited to speak to the children. And while he spoke to the children, he tells the rabbis and the children that his mother and father was killed on Yom Kippur in 1942 in front of him. He was crying and describing all those things. He went down. Reshiva didn't come over to him and say, how were they, what happened? All they wanted is $5,000 that he gave him. He says, I would never give him nothing. Because they don't feel it. You have to feel the pain. Like you could go over to somebody said, Shiva, lost a mother. I know how you feel. How do you know how she feels? You don't know unless you are part of it. And that's the wrong thing to tell anybody. I know how you feel. Only the person who suffers knows how to feel. The Holocaust survivors feel abandoned. They don't want money. They don't want nothing. Just sympathy or be interested what they went through.
Not everybody. That's not true. Not all our
Listen. I got the experience. I came.
My mother carried a number. She wasn't interested in sharing her experience.
She was. That's also true, because there's no listeners. There's no talkers. When I came to this country, I had a few friends. We went to a wedding, and we were talking about the Holocaust. So the balbus who made the wedding, the father or mother of the thing, you have to stop this. This is a simcha, and this is not for this. And we stopped. For 25 years, we didn't talk. You know, when we opened our eyes, when Eichmann trial came, as Lizzie wants to know about Eichmann trial. When Eichmann was caught in Argentina, would you believe it that in Israel, a person who was in the Holocaust was ashamed to tell that he was in the Holocaust? He got a job, wouldn't talk about it, because they said, you went like sheep. He was ashamed of it. I have friends working in banks and all over in different jobs. Even the wife don't know that he was in the Holocaust. When Eichmann was tried in Jerusalem, so luckily I was able to go to the trial. And when I came home, it was a different Moshe Katz. Come tell me what happened. All the newspapers and everything else was full. So they became more or less interested. And then I was able to get places to talk. But up to that date, 1961, there was no such thing as talking about the Holocaust.
Okay, so what happened when you got into...
Where?
In the book you wrote about how that guy got you a ticket.
how I got into the trial? What's the difference? I went to Israel. So I arrived in Israel, and I figured I'm a big shot in New York, so I surely could get some connections. I happened to know the guy who has the concession in the parliament in Jerusalem, Mr. Rosenfeld. So I ran to him. I mean, he knows all the ministers. He knows everybody. Oh, he said, I can get for myself. So one guy tells me on Friday, if you come to me for Shabbos, I'll get you a ticket to Netanya. So I go to him for Shabbos. He calls up all his connections. It's 5,000 seats. And finally, I remember Benyuma Mintz, Paul Agudas Yisroel. I helped him with something, so he says, whenever you need some, I went up to his office, and the secretary talks to me Hebrew. I says, English, okay. I want to see. He comes down. Oh, Marsha, I need a ticket. So I tell you what, it's unavailable, I give you mine. He sent her to the proper authorities. They changed the ticket to my name. When I got in there, the first thing is my passport. Oh, born in Ukraine, Czechoslovakia. Oh, you're from the Holocaust? Yeah. The last row, because they thought that we're going to get excited and jump on Eichmann. He was in a glass stage anyhow. So all the people from Eastern Europe, they put in the back. 20th row, 20th. But I tell you, it gave me back something that I missed. Willing to live. When I saw this guy in Budapest with his bodyguards, and he, with his mouth, he could kill 10,000 Jews more. 10,000 Jews were transported daily to Auschwitz through his auspices. And here I see the guy in a box. You know, I cannot describe you that feeling. It liberated me, completely made a different person of me, because I saw Yad Hashem. And whenever I see Yad Hashem, I always missing more and more. The more I get, the more I want. And this is what it's all about. Holocaust is a privilege and a burden. It's a privilege to survive. Sure, it's a privilege, because you could imagine that in school, we were 30 in one class. I'm the only one alive. From 30. Our block had consisted of apartment houses, more than 200 Jews. Three of us came back from 200. You understand? So you could see that it is a burden, because you start thinking all the things what happened. And the worst part was that we weren't prepared for it. We didn't know what Kiddush Hashem means. The rabbis didn't talk about that. What most important was another mission, another Gemara. But from real life, we didn't know nothing. So among ourselves, we had a group of people. And each week when we met, less and less people came to the secret meeting. So finally, a guy told me, oh, at least we're going to die a Kiddush Hashem. So one guy at Talmud Chacham says, I don't know if a German kills you, is Kiddush Hashem. So, you know, three of us, you know, went to a big Talmud Chacham and says, the real Kiddush Hashem would be if they force you to bow to Avodah Zarah. So we were thinking, alibi, somebody should force us to bow to the Avodah Zarah, and we will be killed, we surely be Kiddush Hashem. Such narishkeit went in our head, because we wanted to do something to make sure that something will be will remain. But it's a very, very painful thing, you know, to suffer through, and people don't. It's not appreciation. Nobody wants money from nobody. I do this for 25 years. I don't take money from nobody. I was here in college. They gave me a few hundred dollars. I gave it to the yeshiva. I don't need it, but I feel good if people are interested, and their children will know there was such a thing. There was Jews, 6 million Jews, who were killed for Atidish Hashem. The only reason they were killed is because they were Jews. And helping to deny that you are a Jew, it don't help, because he needed 4 generations to be purified, and he didn't recognize if somebody converted to Catholicism, it had to be the 4th generation pure. And in Hungary and in Austria, in 1900, 1910, 1920, 24% of the Jews converted to Catholicism because they thought they were going to have it better, and they were just taken away the same as anybody else. And even in our city, people changed their name. From Goldstein was Gold, and from Kleimer was a different name, and they were Orthodox Jews. Shabbos closes, but they changed their names because they thought that it will help them during the war, but it didn't.
I have one question.
Yeah.
I hope
I have an answer.
I don't think so, but I'm going to answer it.
Yeah.
So far, no one's given me an answer. I went back to Poland. I went back to Berlin, my mother's town, and I went to Auschwitz, and I ended up finding I'm named after my aunt. My aunt was married to this man. You're talking about changing his name. Avram Lauden. After the war, he survived. He changed it. He became Anton Lubaisky and married a wife. Okay. Has children. Okay. I think there's so many heathen that are still there someplace, whether they're in Czechoslovakia, Hungary, or Poland. These people.
What is your question?
I mean, can we go? No one's going there, and no one's doing anything to find them. When I was in Krakow, the Lauder organization actually just pulled out, and there were kids there who had found out that they were eating, or some part, pintle eating, and they were interested in finding out about these guys. And nobody's really doing anything.
Okay, I tell you. You are not informed. I tell you what's going on. Anybody heard about the Capuchin Rebbe in Brooklyn? He had an organization which did just that. Dr. Griffel was involved, and there was a person by the name of Yesucher Hirsch who was married to a girl from Poland. She knew Polish, and there. Idea was to rescue the leftovers who were hidden. And I want you to know it wasn't an easy task. I'll give you one example and then you learn what went on. There's a family named Munchik in Sosnovich.
That's Benin and Sosnovich.
Right. This is not far from the.
Today, right next to it.
Yeah. It's not far from the Czechoslovakian border. Not far from Auschwitz either.
This man was from Sosnovich.
Okay.
So,
there was a family, Munchik. They lived in an apartment house. And when they took him to the trains, they had a little girl about 2.5, 3 years old, Miriam. And they tossed her to the superintendent. Here. If you come back, you go back. If you don't come back, it's yours. There were four brothers and a sister, and they all went to camp. I make it short. And they all told each other, remember, I left with the little girl. Okay. After the war, they survived. But the real father and mother did not survive, uncles and aunts. So they came to America, and from America, they were trying. Meanwhile, the Sochnut, which is an Israeli agency in Israel, was very busy collecting those children. They came to Sosnovich, and they approached this girl because they knew from the uncles that there is a girl. They went to the superintendent and told her, lady, you know this is a Jewish child. Yes. No, I brought her up. It's mine already. I said, tell you what. We make a deal. $5,000 American dollars she got. Cash. And this is what she did. They collected three children in Sosnowitz, and the Sochnut drugged those children, put them in bags, and tried to cross the border from Poland to Germany. The woman went to the police. They kidnapped my child. The police tracked them down, and they took the Sochnut, the Israeli people who sacrificed their lives, put them to jail. What happened to them finally, there was a trial, that makes no difference. The same child, when she became 18 years old, under the Polish law, at 18, you have a right to do whatever you want. You don't have to ask your parents. What? Mr. Hirsch and his wife, who spoke Polish, when she came out with her rucksack from school at 18, says, I want to talk to you. Yes. You know you are Jewish? She started thinking. I only remember one thing. I was 10 years old, and I did some mischief, and my mother beat me up and called me a dirty Jew when she was angry. So she remembers, but otherwise she don't remember nothing. So they went to the Goethe, and they start negotiating with her, and she got 15 years ago 5,000, so 5,000 not enough now. But this time they were smart. They went to Belgium with a girl, with a Goethe, and they gave her $5,000 in Belgium to give up. But then she was 18. Know what happens to the child. They wanted to get more children, so they took this girl, put her to Switzerland in a Hasidische house. And she was miserable. 2 weeks ago, she still was in church. And now she's in a Hasidic house. You have to cover here, you have to cover here. You can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. She was miserable. So she came to Belgium. I was in Belgium, I met her. And she says to Mr. Freilich, I want to stay with Mr. Katz. I told her, I'm going to a movie. I'm going swimming, you know, and we are regular people. So she came to America, and she settled in Detroit. She has children. I went to the wedding. It's not easy to deal with that thing. You understand?
So these grandchildren manage the life. They don't want to know. From
they don't want to know. Here, I'll show you another example how the Catholic. How the Catholic Church is handling this. The Catholic Church started to use the word Holocaust. And the Jewish people didn't like that. So a delegation of rabbis and laymen went to Rome to meet with the Pope. We're talking about 15 years ago. One of the delegation was Judge Feinemann, who was a friend of mine. And the Orthodox people didn't believe that you should go meet with the Pope. He went anyhow. And naturally, when it came to bow, they don't bow. They brought kosher meals. For 3 days, they were there. The Pope comes out to say goodbye to the delegation. And they put him there, but why don't you let those children be liberated and go back to their people? We don't do that. So he says, you don't do that. One of the delegates get up and says, Your Majesty, whatever they call him, what happened to Landau? Which Landau? He said, the one who we had. We don't know what happened to him. He says, this is Landau. He was 20 years in Rome by the Pope. He was serving them. And then he found out that he's Jewish. He ran away to Israel. He came to America and was one of the delegates who was imprisoned in Rome by the Catholic. He says, me, you taught me how to hate the Jews. And then he apologized, and if you find one, they don't want to come. We found like 31-year-old ones, we found 20-year-old. He says, what do you want from us? We go to school. But now they come out from hiding, because in Warsaw now there's a shul, there's a restaurant, and they come there and then they feel a little, whatever it is, it's no good. It's not going to be there, nothing. Taking my city now, they have a new rabbi for the last 2 years from Lubavitch, because you may laugh at the Lubavitch, but they are the only one who do work there. If you approve it or not, it's not my business. So Vosukas now, so he's the district rabbi for the whole neighborhood. So he spent the first days of Sukkot here, and now he goes to another place. He came back after Simchas Torah 2 days later. The whole house was ransacked and robbed, and with Svadista and Jew got out of here. Okay, in Ukraine. There's no Menicha. There's in Berlin 2 years ago, Tulubavitch walked. I don't have to tell you in Israel with what goes on with the skinheads. You know what a grandmother said on the trial in Haifa? She tells the judge, "Your Honor, I should have been burned by Hitler rather than to live the day that my grandson is doing that." It's painful, you know, you call them crazy, I don't call them crazy. This is a society where you could do anything you want, and everybody jumps on the bandwagon. They're miserable forever they want, and they're doing things like this. There may be hundreds of them hidden. And they only go on Jews who have a bear. They don't care about the Jews who are not religious. They attack Jewish women and men whom they recognize of being religious. Those skinheads in Israel. So if there's no other question, we're going to say good night. What a wonderful audience. And thank you so much for...